Hi, everyone. We are back for another episode of the Hauenstein Center's podcast series, Off the Stage. I am Maddie Miller. I am the media specialist for the Hauenstein Center, and today is my third interview of the day with David Beer, Associate Director of Immigration Studies at Cato Institute. David, thank you for being on the podcast.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
David is here for our bipartisan policy panel on immigration that we are hosting tonight. So if you are listening to this podcast, fortunately, the event has already happened, but do not fret. You can go to the link in the description to listen to the recording of the event on YouTube or in podcast form. And I am anticipating a great conversation, so you should definitely check that out. David, where are you traveling from today?
Washington, D.C.
Similar to your fellow panelists. So, and you had an okay travel time?
Everything went well.
Hey, love to hear that. Love to hear that. So sitting in front of you, you see a little bowl right there. That is our famous BOQ, which stands for Bowl of Questions. So feel free to grab a question out of there, read it, and then you can answer it for us.
Think about the desk in your office. What is one thing on it that is unique to you? Mm. Wow, that's a great question. So I have the Congressional Cookbook underneath my monitor, so it boosts it up a little bit.
Okay.
That was a gift from Congressman Labrador, who I worked for in 2014. Mm-hmm. And... yeah, so I have that in case I ever need to start baking up some delicious cookies
in your office.
Or casseroles. There's a lot of interesting stuff in there.
So have you made something from it before, or?
I'm not much for the kitchen.
Okay.
So, no, but
if you ever would.
If I ever wanted to.
You have that cookbook ready to go.
Yeah.
That's awesome. I love to hear it. Okay, let's do one more question from the BOQ. That was a good one.
If you could choose anything to grow on trees, what would you want? That's a deep question.
That is very deep. I don't think it was intended to be deep, but it is.
Anything. Wow. So I think that this is a hard question because I have to think about a lot of,
there's a lot of factors,
right? Really for me, the most important thing is having, a adequately charged cell phone battery. Okay. So perhaps that would be particularly useful.
You're saying cell phone batteries?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Yes. That is a very interesting answer.
Yeah.
Okay. I love it. I was immediately thinking about the logistics of could I make a profit off this tree? But then it's like, it grows on trees, so everyone has access to it. So it's really interesting.
That would help a lot of people, I think.
Yeah. Okay. The cell phone batteries. Yeah. I agree. Well, cool. Thank you for answering our BOQ questions. Now we're going to transition to the actual interview. And I always love to start our interviews just talking about hearing from our guests. Where did you grow up? What was your childhood like? What were you interested in when you were in school? Those kinds of things.
So I grew up in South Jersey, outside of Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. And I was basically exclusively interested in sports. Cool. I like tennis. I like basketball. Mm-hmm. It helped being over 6 foot for both of those endeavors. I grew up sort of on a farm.
Okay.
That was initially how my parents classified our property. We were growing Christmas trees.
Cool.
The Christmas tree harvest never came in, and eventually we lost our designation as a farm because we failed to produce any or sell any Christmas trees. We have a lot of... evergreens on our property that mm-hmm. could in theory be sold, but we decided to go a different route. And so, yeah, it was an interesting environment. We had multiple ponds and a lot of wildlife on our property. And as South Jersey had expanded and the suburbs sort of grew while I was growing up there, more and more of the wildlife moved onto our property. So mm-hmm. we had kind of herds of deer, wild turkeys. So it was kind of a interesting place to grow up.
Yeah.
I am the fifth of six kids. So it was, a zoo in more ways than one.
Yep.
Growing up on the beer farm.
Yeah.
And yeah, it was fun. Always something going on, always something to do. Every once in a while, we'd have hunters come on our property and we'd hear gunshots and it, a little bit unsettling, but we would, take it upon ourselves to chase them off and make them clear that I was private property.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it's an interesting place to grow up.
Yeah, that's really cool. So I'm interested to hear, where you went to school, what did you study? But also, I always love to hear, how people chose what to study in undergrad, just because, that usually comes from somewhere, but they don't really know exactly where. So I'm just interested to hear that.
That's a great question. So initially, I wanted to be an engineer. So, mm-hmm. That was my first listed major was mechanical engineering.
Nice.
I decided that I was more passionate about economics and policy and cool. philosophy. And that those ended up being my majors of interest.
Cool.
Ended up with 2 degrees. And so, yeah, I guess I was more, I wanted to be an engineer to be an architect more than to do the mechanical stuff. So that was the reason for the transition, the major reason for the transition. But it's certainly, the fact that I was so interested in the policy world played a big role in that.
Yeah. And where did you go to undergrad at?
So I went to Rutgers in New Jersey, in New Brunswick,
cool.
But I ended up graduating from Grove City College, which is north of Pittsburgh, and I also studied abroad, so I ended up attending 3 different universities. That's my background.
That's cool. Where did you study abroad at?
Quito, Ecuador.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Cool. I was just recently in Guatemala, actually. So, same way. What do you think about your career, things that you've done thus far? What is something that you're really proud of that you've done?
There's a lot of things that I can feel proud of.
Yeah.
I think that, when I started as a person in policy,
mm-hmm.
I started from ground zero. I had to build up my expertise in the area that I chose to focus on, which is immigration. I've been testified before Congress several times. I've appeared in many different print and media publications, but the Supreme Court in its decision on preserving the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program ended up citing one of the research that I did here at the Cato Institute
mm-hmm.
As one of the factors for why the administration should have done a more thorough job in considering its wind down of the DACA program. And so I think in terms of impact, that was probably one of the most impactful things that I've done. I, of course, didn't know that that was going to be one of the more impactful things that I've done. But it goes to show that once you build up a body of work. You never know what is going to prove to be mm-hmm. critical down the line.
Yeah, that's really, really cool to hear. So you said you worked specifically on immigration. How did you get into that, like, subject?
Yeah, so initially when I started in policy in Washington, D.C., it was in environmental policy.
Okay.
And so my interest in how population affects resources, affects the country, grew from there. Obviously, there's some similarities. You know, immigration is an increase in our population. That was kind of the first way in which I was directed into this policy area. You know, one of the most important figures in my, I guess, intellectual development was Julian Simon, who was an economist. He was affiliated with the Cato Institute for many years, who wrote books about immigration, but also about the environment. His, I guess, most famous work is called The Ultimate Resource, and it's about how human beings are the ultimate resource. And so when we feel like human beings are going to, you know, tax the resources and make it impossible for us to live because there's too many of us, his response is, look, human beings are inventive. They're not just takers, they're creators. And so they come up with new ways to do things and prevent resources from becoming scarcer and scarcer over time, even as our population continues to grow. So that was my initial, I guess, interest in immigration and population. And then my colleague who was working on the immigration issues ended up moving, leaving, and created an opportunity for me to transition mm-hmm. from working on environmental issues to working on immigration full time. And that was in 2012, and I've been working on immigration policy ever since.
That's cool. And so you are the Associate Director of Immigration Studies at the Cato Institute. For me, but also for the listeners, tell us a little bit about what the Cato Institute is.
The Cato Institute is a public policy, nonpartisan research organization in Washington, D.C. We've mm-hmm. existed for over four decades, founded in the 1970s. We have founding principles. We are dedicated to free markets, individual liberty, limited government, and peace. That is broadly described as the libertarian philosophy, and mm-hmm. we see our research as exemplifying how limited government and liberty can benefit Americans and the world through positive interactions between people, voluntary yeah. exchange. Whether it be through the public sphere or private sphere, mm-hmm. that's the goal of our organization.
That's cool. That's really cool. So tell us, as the Associate Director of Immigration Studies, what does like a day in the life look like?
Well, there's some variability to it.
I'm sure.
But usually, you know, my goal is to produce something noteworthy or original in the immigration space every month. So nice. I want to have some original contribution to the debate, and some of that is going to be longer papers, some of it's going to be shorter blog posts, and sometimes I'm writing pieces for the New York Times or the Washington Post cool. And those pieces, you know, what I'm writing is going to differ in terms of what it takes. You know, sometimes I'm looking at Excel more than I'm writing words on a page, but But yeah. It's, you know, so there's some, you know, variability to what I'm working on. I'm commonly responding to questions from journalists mm-hmm. and others about, you know, what's going on with this policy, what's the background here, what yeah. should I know about this subject. So, you know, I'm spending at least, you know, 30 minutes to an hour, probably on average, talking to people about policy. Some of them are staffers and members of Congress mm-hmm. Who are interested in hearing some more about whatever topic that they're trying to get involved in.
Yeah.
And, you know, want to hear, you know, my take or, you know, want some specific facts or point yeah. them in the direction of data that's relevant to the issue. So, yeah, those are something, you know, I appear on Fox News or other media every once in a while as well.
Cool. That's really cool. It's cool to hear. So my next question is something I've brought up in every podcast. So excited to hear your take on it. But basically this year, the Hauenstein Center, this academic year, our programming is all focused around this idea of empowered citizenship. So like that's like our theme, just talking about, you know, how can we empower others to be citizens of our country and of our communities and our world and, you know, make it a better place. So I just would love to hear from you. How do you think the idea of empowered citizenship applies to the work you do in your career, but also just for you personally as well?
I think it's incredibly important for people to get involved and to understand the important issues and policies of our time, what our government is doing, mm-hmm. you know, in our name matters. And, you know, I think I spend a lot of time thinking about how can the average person understand some of these issues better. Mm-hmm. And so when it comes to my work, I'm thinking about not just the technical policy expert and influencing them or a person in government, but also the average person and how are they going to understand what their government is doing and what the effects of these policies are. Mm-hmm. So, you know, one of the initiatives that we did last year, which you can all check out, is called the greencardgame.com, which is an online interface where you can pretend to be an immigrant and try to immigrate legally through the lawful pathways that our Congress has made available.
Cool.
And so you can put in your information. You can put in the information of one of your ancestors who immigrated yeah. 120 years ago when the immigration mm-hmm. laws were totally different than what they are now. Mm-hmm. And see, you know, could my ancestor have qualified? Could yeah. I qualify? And, you know, it's, you know, tens of thousands of people have tried, mm-hmm. including many people who are policy experts in this area. And, you know, only a small fraction have managed to get green cards through our game. So mm-hmm. it's a game you should be prepared to lose.
Yeah.
But, I will
definitely link that below. That sounds really cool.
But yeah, that's one, you know, way in which we're trying to, you know, I wrote a 120-page paper mm-hmm. about the research that went into making the game. You know, what are the pathways? What are all the rules in detail that you have yeah. to go through? What are the obstacles? Why are people who are trying to immigrate not able to qualify through mm-hmm. that process? And transforming that, you know, policy paper into, well, how do we actualize this for people? How do we show yeah. them that there's a way to, you know, that these paths that we sort of hold out as, mm-hmm. okay, these are the ways in which you can immigrate. And a lot of people think, okay, well, anyone should be able to do this. You know, it's not that hard. You know, you sign your name on a list. You just wait a couple years and you're in. This game allows people to find out what it's really like. And it's, you know, it's much more challenging than they think.
Yeah, that's really cool. Remind me what that game is called, because I want to link it below for sure.
TheGreenCardGame.com.
Okay, I will definitely put that in the description, because I think that is a really valuable tool to just like, not prove a point, but kind of just show people, that difficult process. That's really cool. Thanks for sharing that. So I have two more questions for you. Second to last question is, what is your life like outside of work? So what are your interests? What are your hobbies? How do you spend your Saturdays? Those kinds of things.
Well, I'm a father.
Cool.
I have a wife and two young kids who are five. My daughter is in kindergarten, and my son is three, and he's in preschool. And they consume much of my off hours, as you might imagine.
For
that
sure.
I like to plan different things, write them books and stories and stuff like that. I'm writing a book right now for my daughter that's called Who Am I? And it describes all the different ways you can describe a human being and what they are, what chemical level, at their ancestry level.
Oh, cool.
And goes through all the different ways in which you can describe who you are and where you came from.
Yeah.
And so I'm excited to complete that.
That's awesome.
This year. So that's these are all hobbies. I still play basketball every Tuesday and Wednesday.
Awesome.
You can catch me on the courts if you want a challenge. I'll let you in on a secret. 90% are coming from 3-point line or beyond.
Love that.
And yeah, so that's I'm still into my passions of sports, but my family is the main thing.
Yeah, that's awesome. And that's such a fun age for kids too. Yeah. My niece is almost turning three, and she is just so much fun. So I love to hear that.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for sharing that. My last question is how I end all of our Off the Stage podcasts. And basically, I love to hear, what would be your advice to people who maybe want to go into a similar career as yours?
Figure out what your passion is. There's a lot of opportunity out there, more than you might think, but, go deep, figure out, okay, I'm passionate about this. Let me find out what's actually going on here. And that requires a deep dive, really getting into the particulars. The way in which I build up my expertise was just read every bill that comes out, read every law on the books. That stuff is readily available and can get you a long way. Obviously there's a lot of nuance that goes into it. Over time you find out that the laws on the books, only tell you about maybe 50% of the story, on what is actually happening, but it's a good start. And if you're passionate about an issue area or a topic, and you're willing to, do the deep dive and do the work, there's a market out there, because, there aren't enough people who are willing to, put in that kind of work and an investment in figuring out what's really going on.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's great advice. Thanks for sharing that. We have a lot of people who, students and whatnot, who listen to this podcast. So that's why I like to always ask those kinds of questions.
Of course.
Yeah. Thank you so much for being on the podcast. Again, our event starts in like an hour or so. So I'm very excited to hear you on our stage. And for those listening, I will link to the fellow panelists Off the Stage episodes. So you should definitely listen to those as well, along with the link to our event tonight in either YouTube video form or podcast form. But thank you so much for listening. Thank you for listening to Off the Stage Podcast, a series produced by the Hauenstein Center for Presidential Studies at Grand Valley State University. The Hauenstein Center, inspired by Ralph Hauenstein's life of leadership and service, is dedicated to raising a community of ethical, effective leaders for the 21st century. For more information on our center, our Cook Leadership Academy, or our Common Ground Initiative, visit our website at www.gvsu.edu/hc. To keep up with our current events and reoccurring initiatives, you can follow us on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, or LinkedIn, all of which can be found linked below. If you liked this episode, consider giving us a review or rating so we can be found by other podcast listeners. Again, thanks for listening to Off the Stage Podcast.